life has a way of kind of knocking you down and stomping on your throat when you're kind of rolling around on the ground, and you still got to find a way to get up, and you still got to find a way to continue to work. And that's something that I know is a constant message from us, that regardless of whether we're doing well or whether we're struggling, you know, we're going to be consistent in our approach. You know, I don't really have many other hitting talents. I'm awful at golf. I can't sing. I can't dance. So I guess in a lot of respects, baseball is in my blood, and it's just a lot of different branches as to how I kind of use it throughout the course of the year.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you are dialed back into our podcast and another edition of our Dugout Chatter episodes. We've got a big-time show for you all today. Just some tremendous insight from a great baseball guy, and we're going to kick that off in just a second. But first and foremost, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association and the over 8,000 coaches worldwide that we represent. We just appreciate each of you guys listening each and every week. We're reaching so many demographics out there, even past just the coaching community. We're into the parents. We're into players. You know, again, plus all the coaches across every single level of baseball. And to all those folks, thank you. We appreciate your loyalty to the show, to the ABCA, this content, our guests. We just appreciate you guys listening in. Now, this particular episode has been in the making for a long time. I connected with our guests last year on social media, and within minutes, I let them know, hey, you're on my short list for the podcast, and I've waited patiently, and then all of a sudden it happened. We had a break in the schedule. We locked down Darren Fenster, who's the manager for the Greenville Drive and the Boston Red Sox organization, and Fens brought absolute certified audio gold to the table for our listeners on this one. As we get going, we jump right into his social media presence. And if you're not following Darren on Twitter, and that's at CoachYourKids, stop this show, push pause, find him on there, hit the follow button, and then come back to the show. It's going to be worth it. Just tremendous and terrific content and insight, preaching the absolutes of the game through a very blue-collar lens, and it's awesome. Great stuff on there. But we also dive into his coaching why. We talk about developing players and those great relationships that he has within his own teams, his particular journey through baseball and how he landed on his philosophy of showing up each and every day for his guys. Just an awesome story. Great reflections from Darren on this one. Just a tremendous baseball dude, and we're so thankful he's out there in our community and a proud member of the ABCA. Now, once again, we are using these segments, guys, to shine a positive light on the endless list of extraordinary baseball men that are part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA. And we've got a stud on deck for you today. Darren Fenster from the Boston Red Sox is our guest on today's Dugout Chatter episode. And get ready, coaches, because this great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, excited about this interview, does not even begin to tell the story. As we sit down and we're talking with Darren Fenster, the manager of the Greenville Drive, which is an affiliate in the Boston Red Sox organization. Fens, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Really appreciate you having me, Sheetsy. Love what you're doing, man. And the learning that you're pulling off here with your role in the ABCA has just been awesome over the past year, 2 years, however long you've been doing it.
Appreciate that, man. We're working hard to continue to educate our coaches, support our coaches, but ultimately it is about, you know, growing this great game of baseball. And along those same lines, that's why you become a perfect fit for us to get on the podcast. I know you and I have been working on this for a few months now. We've tried to work around your schedule in pro ball, but let's start on that ABCA and what your experience has been coming up through the organization, but at the same time, where you've seen this thing go, how conventions have gone for you, and all the great things that you see us doing. Talk about ABCA.
Well, I was first exposed to ABCA when I was coaching at Rutgers, which was the start of my coaching career, mm-hmm. I guess 11 years ago. Coach Hill, who is an ABCA Hall of Famer, he took our entire staff over at Rutgers to the convention every year. And I remember the first one we went to, I believe, was in Orlando. And I was just blown away by just the atmosphere that you guys put on there of an entire group of thousands of people who are there looking to learn so that they could help their players get better. And then hearing all the speakers every year, it just really opens your eyes to understand that, hey, the bubble that you might be in prior to being exposed to anybody else, there's a ton of different ways to do things on the field. There's a ton of different ways to impact our players off the field. And that was my initial reaction to seeing what the ABCA was all about. And then just over these past couple of years to see the social media presence that you guys have created, with the weekly chats, the podcasts, everything. It's sharing so much knowledge from some of the greatest minds in the game. And, it's really had an impact on me and, really helped me become a better coach on the field for not just the guys who I work with on a daily basis, but hopefully a lot of other people who I'm able to impact in one way, shape or form, away from pro ball.
Sure. Well, we appreciate that, man. I think we're just, again, doing our part to really help facilitate. And at the end of the day, what we've seen is it's starting to positively change the culture of our coaches in terms of forcing more guys to think in personal growth mindset and to think, I've got to explore some opportunities or more importantly, challenge the way I think and what my opinions are inside this game and how I want to go about coaching it. And it certainly had a positive impact, and we really appreciate the kind words. Along those same lines, man, if anybody at home, Fins, is following you on Twitter, and we're going to talk about social media for a second. If anybody's following at Coach Your Kids, Darren Fensler's account, man, we were just talking before we started recording. You have flipped a switch, and it's awesome, and it's great to see you really out there preaching, coaching for the right reasons, and really helping our players and coaches challenging what they're doing. If you could, man, talk about your decision to really attack social media and the responses you've gotten from it.
Well, believe me, I do not have all the answers by any means, but this thing kind of started very organically, probably 3 or 4 years ago when, you know, I had very little interest in Twitter on a personal basis and just on as a means to kind of follow some current events, follow some things going on in baseball. I kind of created an account, and slowly but surely, I saw a lot of passionate baseball people out there. Some really, really good, but also some who were given some bad information with their own personal motives that were very one way in their thinking, and they were kind of not only preaching what they believed was the one way to do things, but also kind of knocking some other guys down just because they didn't agree with them. And I was like, you know what? There's so much information out there. And I was of the mindset that, you know what? I'm in a position that I've worn a number of different hats. And rather than, you know, sell anything, I just wanted to provide some content. Like, hey, this is some experiences that I've had over the years in the game as a player, as a coach in college, working professionally with the Red Sox. And I think people started to appreciate that it was never attacking one guy or another. It was just, hey, this is what we see. And then, you know, in the way that Twitter has kind of grown, it gives you an opportunity to kind of show videos or give graphs or throw all kinds of different stuff up there. Sure. And it's grown so much just over the past couple of years that I think people appreciate just the very straightforward nature that I present some of the things that I believe have helped me personally as a player, as a coach, and I think ways that we can help our players. And, sometimes it turns into some interesting discussions, and I use that in quotes. But at the end of the day, if you're passionate about the game and you're passionate about helping people, it could be a very, very positive medium to help us grow in a lot of different respects.
Sure. And if you could boil it down, I mean, you know, follow up to that, what's kind of the main message that you're really trying to get across? If you had to just absolutely simplify what you're trying to approach your account with, how would you define that?
I mean, my biggest thing right now is understanding each individual athlete, understanding that you have individual personalities, you have individual skills, and there's no one way to do things, and there's no one way cookie cutter thing, and as to how to be successful in the game in any respect. There are some, you know, big umbrella things as to how you could be successful. But under that umbrella, there's a ton of different ways that we could put our players in a great position to be successful.
That's great. Thank you for doing that. Well, let's get into your experience, because this is what the beauty of Dugout Chatter episodes are about. We get to find out who Darren Fenster is outside the white lines. And so let's start, and you referenced it, you know, your start at Rutgers and working your way up through pro ball. But let's start back from the playing career and then the decision to get into coaching and then obviously where that's taken you. Talk us through your career in baseball.
Well, following my playing career at Rutgers, I was fortunate to have been drafted by the Royals in the year 2000. And, you know, that was kind of fulfilling, you know, the first part of the lifelong dream of becoming a professional baseball player. And the second part was obviously getting to and staying in the big leagues and never having to work a day in my life. And in March of 2005, I had the opportunity to go to Major League Spring Training for the first time. And with about a week left in camp, I jumped for a ball, as I had done probably a million times. And when I came down, my leg went one way and my knee went the other way. And before you know it, my career was over, and I had to come up with a plan B. I spent the whole 2005 season rehabbing my knee out in Arizona. Went back to spring training in 2006, not for a second thinking I would never play again, but just didn't come back the same player I was, even though I was medically cleared, and kind of got you know, a little blindsided by getting released at the end of spring training. I had no plan B. I had no desire to coach. I had no desire to really do anything other than play. And so when I returned home to New Jersey, you know, I kind of reached out to Coach Hill, who had been like a second father to me, and just for some life advice. And he had asked me if I had any interest in coaching, to which I said, I have no idea. I have no other interests. All I wanted to do was play. And that had kind of been swept out from under my feet.
Sure.
And he said, well, you know, I think you might be a good coach. And if you're interested and you'd like to join my staff, I'll create the position of director of baseball operations for you. So that was in April of 2006. And because I had nothing else going on, I said, yeah, sure, why not? Well, during that time at Rutgers, we had a really impressive group headlined by Todd Frazier, who's now, you know, a Major League All-Star with the Chicago White Sox. And that group that was there, I think that we wound up having, you know, 10, 12, 15 guys from that team in 2006, 2007 that wound up winning the Big East, who wound up playing pro ball. That group that was there really made me feel like I could have an impact on their lives on the field, off the field, in the same exact way that a ton of guys had an impact on me. Mm-hmm. And I took to coaching very, very quickly. And I give credit to that group because they gave me a purpose and they gave me a reason to kind of go to the ballpark every day without spikes on. And I had spent my off seasons working out there. So I had some relationships with some players, and the coaching staff that was there at Rutgers at the time was kind of the old guard. And I think I was able to connect with those guys on a pretty personal level, having come from the level that they all wanted to be at. And so, you know, they kind of gave me a second life in the game, so to speak. And, you know, I wound up going from the director of baseball operations. I spent the summer coaching in the Northwoods League, spent the summer coaching in the Cape, and then became an assistant coach, recruiting coordinator. And next thing you know, like, you know, I'm able to be in a really impactful position in a college baseball program.
Right.
As you may know, Coach Hill was, when I played for Coach Hill, he was in his, I believe, his mid-60s. And when I coached under him, he was in his mid to late 70s. So my goals personally went from hoping to get to the big leagues as a player to now hoping to be in a position to take over the program at Rutgers.
Sure.
Well, during that time was right around when amateur baseball and travel baseball really changed and recruiting became a completely different animal. And it became a lot easier for schools from all across the country to see players from all across the country in a very easy light, where, you know, back in the day, some 15, 20 years ago, if you wanted to see a kid from New Jersey, a school from down south would have to fly up to New Jersey to see one kid on one day in one game. And whereas now you could see every kid from New Jersey at one place with, you know, all the showcases and travel tournaments that are out there.
Right.
And, you know, we had kind of gone from being one of the best programs in the Northeast in the late 90s, early 2000s to kind of middle of the pack program. And, you know, I became realistic to the point where if Coach Hill decided to retire and we were kind of continuing to really scuffle in the middle of the pack, I might not have only been, you know, out of a job at Rutgers. I might have been out of baseball entirely. So, you know, while continuing to push and continue to work to kind of get Rutgers back on the right track, I kind of started getting the itch to get back onto the pro side. And in the winter of 2011, I was in the right place at the right time. And with a couple openings, the Red Sox hired me to be a hitting coach in Greenville in the South Atlantic League. And after 1 year doing that, I don't know if I was really, really good at that or really, really bad at being a hitting coach, but I was promoted to becoming the manager at the Gulf Coast League level, which is an incredible experience in the respect that it's as much professionalizing guys and sometimes babysitting guys as it is anything that we're doing on the field with guys who are either newly drafted out of high school or right off the boat from Latin America. After a year of being in the Gulf Coast League, I've been managing here in Greenville, South Carolina, in the South Atlantic League for the last 4 years now. And it's an awesome opportunity now with a little perspective to see the impact that we have on these guys as players and as people as they kind of move up, and to watch them kind of move through the system and eventually get to the big leagues, whether it be with us or with somebody else, is a really satisfying thing. And it gives you a really good sense of accomplishment when there are so many of us in the organization who have, you know, kind of helped these guys along and put them in that position to really work and develop and into major league players.
That's so cool. Awesome. I appreciate you going through all that. I know it's extensive, but it certainly paints the picture why you're doing what you're doing, the way that you approach it. But I'm also interested, a great follow-up to this, it would be when you first got into it. And like you said, you didn't really have the plan to coach, but you kind of got into it and it scratched the itch. And now you got the sickness and now, you know, you can do it forever. But at the same time, when you first got going to now, Darren, what are some of those lessons you learned along the way that as a young coach, you're like, man, I was so far off?
Well, in the respect that that group at Rutgers gave me that sense of being able to really impact them, I was so passionate about the game and I was so convicted on my beliefs that I was that one way coach and I was that, you know, late 20s know-it-all who was going to change everything. And I was going to get us back to the top of the Big East and I was going to get us to Omaha from a director of baseball operations position, if you could imagine that.
Yes, sir.
And what I realized was that, you know, it took me a while to do this, was that these guys were not me. I was not Coach Hill, and I needed to open up my mind and get out of my bubble and, you know, understand that I didn't have all the answers, no matter how passionate I was to help and how passionate I was to have an impact. And that's one of the things that still drives me today. I mean, obviously, as a coach, we all have our own beliefs on the things that put our players in the position to be really successful. But we always evolve from them. And I think the second you get stuck in the mud and you're not moving at all and at least looking for other ways to impact our guys on and off the field, I think that's one of those times when the game goes speeding by you. And, you know, the kids are always going to the game relatively is going to stay the same, but the personalities are always going to change. And that's the greatest challenge for me is figuring out a way to get through these guys on a personal level so that you're able to impact them on a baseball level.
You know, I just watched a video before we got rolling here about Coach Deggs at Sam Houston State talking about being transformational and not being transactional and not looking for the win or, like you said, just to get to Omaha. It was more about impacting lives, changing lives, and positively impacting those people. That goes right along with that message. You know, I also think this. I think if we're talking about, again, your social media presence and the things that you're thinking and talking about, and certainly there's an element of that, that following certain people or having those dialogues or those correspondence with other, you know, followers is a way that you're challenging yourself and certainly solidifying what you think is right inside this game. But talk to our listeners about how you are challenging that every day. How are you challenging your why?
You know, challenging the why for me on a personal level is getting through the grind of a 140 game season. I mean, every single day, there's something going on with someone that we have to address, that we have to work on. And, you know, I'm speaking on the baseball side right now. There's not a single day over the course of a baseball season where you have all 25 guys rolling exactly how you want them to roll. And right now we're We got 7 games left in the first half, and you know, we're struggling on an offensive standpoint. You know, our pitching has been outstanding, and it's almost as if our pitching isn't, you know, giving up 1 or 2 runs, we struggle to be in the game at all. And so to really challenge myself to figure out, hey, like, I have discussions with our staff, you know, seemingly every night now, as to like, how can we get through to these guys? You know, why do some nights we look like a major league team and other nights we look like a high school JV team, you know, when we get into the box? And, you know, it's not that we're facing Hall of Fame pitchers on the mound, and you know, it's figuring out why we're here. Our job is completely developmental based, and the winning kind of is very secondary to that. And you know, pushing these guys through during their struggles and keeping them working when they're doing well is what, you know, being a professional is all about. And also is a very similar way in terms of how to approach life on a daily basis. You're going to have days where you're feeling great and everything is going well, and then, you know, life has a way of kind of knocking you down and stomping on your throat when you're kind of rolling around on the ground, and you still got to find a way to get up, and you still got to find a way to continue to work. And that's something that I know is a constant message from us, that regardless of whether we're doing well or whether we're struggling, you know, we're going to be consistent in our approach.
Sure. Wow. And to minor league guys, I mean, that's like the message they have to hear, right?
No doubt. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys, like, you know, they come out of college and they come out of high school having never really failed, and dealing with failure for the first time. For some, it's an absolute struggle and they don't know how to get out of it because they've never had to deal with it.
That's it.
You know, for some other guys, they have a really strong mental game, and they really are able to stay on that even keel that you hear about all the time, and, you know, not getting too high and not getting too low, where, you know, these guys are moping around in the corner every time they, you know, come back to the dugout without getting a hit. So, you know, it's as much teaching life as it is baseball, and, you know, the two of them kind of work hand in hand.
I'll tell you what, it's not just a message for minor league guys. It's a message for every coach listening to this. I love this question, and I think it's so awesome for guests to really reflect back. And I want you to walk us through some of the highs and some of the lows. And when you get to the lows, Fins, go through how you dealt with them. How did you overcome the adversity of those throughout your career?
I mean, as a player, my highs were pile-ons where you're winning a championship.
Sure.
Those are my best memories. You know, my greatest thoughts of the game are all revolving around, you know, a couple pile-ons I had at Rutgers, the relationships I built there. Highs professionally as a coach are when you were at Rutgers, it was seeing guys get drafted. When you're here, it's being able to call a guy into the office and tell him he's moving up to the higher level. Or it might be something as simple as reading a press release that one of our guys that got drafted 3-4 years ago got added to the major league roster. Those are the moments where it's like, okay, you know what, like, for as hard as this is, and for as much of a grind as the season is, and for the amount of time that you're taking away and you spend more time with these guys than you do with your own family,
right,
that makes you feel like, you know, it's worth it on every respect on a lot of different levels. On the low side of things, you know, it's the complete opposite end of the spectrum when you're getting knocked out of a playoff spot, when I got to call a kid into the office and release him because, you know, that's the nature of the business of professional baseball.
Yeah.
And, you know, as tough as that is, you know, it's still got to be a learning experience. And I don't think there's anything worse. And guys who have been in the chair of being the guy that gets released, as well as the guy who has to tell a kid that he's being cut from a high school team or from a college team, I mean, that's, you're telling a kid who's probably been dreaming about being a major leaguer his whole life that, you know, potentially he may never play again. And that is not a fun thing one bit. But hopefully you have a relationship with that kid to the point where that's not the end, where walking out of that office, it might be the end of his playing career, but if that's a kid who wants to get into coaching or wants to get into scouting or wants to stay in the game in some respect, that could bring you back up to another high where you've had an impact on this kid and you've given him such a good experience on the field that they want to stay in the game and continue to be around it and impact players and impact people the same way everybody else who has found a way to stay in this game has in one way, shape, or form.
Well, as you're talking through that, and I'm going to stay on it for just a quick second, I'm thinking Moneyball. And I'm certainly, I know how passionate you are. You know, I know your approach isn't just slit their throat. How do you approach that conversation? Again, I know it's relationship-based, every one of them. But like you said, going a little bit more deeper, just for our listeners to know how you handle that conversation.
Kind of a rip the Band-Aid off. Not a beat around the bush and then finish it up with, yeah, well, we're going to release you. You know, fortunately, I haven't had to release a ton of guys over the course of my career, but, you know, one is just as hard as the next. And it's bringing the kid in and sitting him down and flat out saying, hey, you know, the organization's decided to give you a release. And then you kind of let the kid take it in and you give them the floor and let them talk. And a lot of times they don't really have much to say. And, you know, other times they might see the writing on the wall and, you have a conversation there and you might sit there for 10 or 15 minutes and you're just talking and, you know, you understand that, hey, this is a part of the game. And, you know, like I said, hopefully the relationship, there's a foundation there where, you know, the relationship continues, throughout the course of the years and, doesn't always work out that way, but, you know, one of the greatest compliments I think any coach could get is, you know, when you get something down the road, it might be a month, it might be a year, it might be 5 years, and you see that there are guys who have been on your roster who are still coaching or are doing something in the game.
Sure.
Rather than leaving pro ball or leaving a college environment where they're so bitter about getting cut that they're like, all right, screw the game, I'm done.
Yep.
So it's an interesting dynamic, but just as on the field, off the field, they're definitely the highs and lows that you got to deal with.
So this is a tough question. And for a guy, it's a baseball lifer for, you know, you're navigating the Sally League on buses and hotels. But if you weren't coaching, if baseball was taken away from you, if you were away from the game, what would you be doing? What's Darren Fenster's second calling in life?
That's a great question. I did have about a 2 month period in the summer of 2011 where I was kind of at that crossroads, kind of forward thinking a little bit, wondering, hey, you know, if I'm not coaching at Rutgers, if I'm not in this position to take over the program, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I started having some conversations with some friends and some guys who I'd played with and against professionally and in college. And believe it or not, I actually wound up going out on some interviews for medical device sales companies, not because I had any interest in medical device sales, but
sure,
because a lot of guys had kind of gotten into that profession. And I guess it's a very good profession that a lot of former athletes get into, because it is competitive. There's a lot of work ethic behind it, some coachability aspects of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's a financial aspect of it that can make, you know, you very, very comfortable in life.
Yes.
And so when, you know, as I'm sure you can imagine, we're never going to get rich coaching baseball.
Yep.
And you kind of get tired at one point or another living paycheck to paycheck. I know I was in my late 20s living in my parents' house. For a couple months, I started interviewing for some of these jobs that required 3 to 5 years of business-to-business experience, and I had 0 days of real-world work experience.
Right.
And I left these interviews thinking, number one, I could absolutely do these jobs. Number two, it was life-changing money for me at the time. But number three, and this was the game changer, was that I really didn't care. I really didn't care about any medical device and I didn't have a passion for it. And that's when I kind of pumped the brakes a little bit and started thinking about getting into pro ball. And that was probably the best decision I've made, was to kind of turn away from the real world, so to speak, and start networking and looking into getting into pro ball and staying in the game. Because once this is in your blood and you got a passion for it,
yeah.
I mean, you know, like I told you before we got going here, my worst days on the field are a lot better than most people's best. And I don't discredit that one day. And I really appreciate the people that I work with, the organization I work with, the players that I work with. It makes my days fun.
Sure.
And I don't think you can really put a dollar figure on that. So long-winded, I think I'd be selling medical device, but I probably wouldn't be nearly as happy as I am right now.
That's every coach has that conversation, either out loud or between their ears. Now, this is a tough one because I think sometimes guys get, just like most of us, wrapped up in the game. We don't take time for ourselves outside of it. But are there hobbies, Fins, that you have outside? But also, this is a tough one too, hidden talent. What's something, drop a dime on us, a hidden talent that not very many people know about you?
Well, I don't know if it's so much hidden, but because, you know, in the off season and a handful of times throughout the course of the year, For whatever reason, I've been able to write pretty well. And this is going back to probably high school. As I'm sure you could tell from this interview, sometimes I stumble over my words, but when I put things down on paper, they come out flowing pretty well. And, you know, a few years ago, I kind of started a blog that kind of, was a kind of spinoff of from my Twitter feed. And that kind of parlayed into, writing, for a couple magazines, including Inside Pitch. And that's kind of worked into doing a weekly blog, for USA Baseball. And, you know, it kind of keeps my mind engaged in the off season. You know, kind of keeps me thinking about different ways to do things. And also in the big picture of the game, kind of giving some insight as to, you know, some of the things that just some very basic parts of the game that I feel like might get lost in this age that we're living in of, almost the information overload. You know, the writing aspect is probably something that, you know, most people might not know about me, but, you know, I don't really have many other hitting talents. I'm awful at golf. I can't sing. I can't dance. So, you know, I guess in a lot of respects, baseball is in my blood, and it's just a lot of different branches as to how I kind of use it throughout the course of the year.
Well, that stinks, because I was getting ready to ask you. I was going to start a traveling karaoke business, and I was going to ask you to come with me, but I guess we're not doing that now.
No, I'm out.
You know, stay on a little bit of the funnier side of things. I love the question of funniest stories that have happened to you over the years. You've had a lot of experiences inside the game. What are some of those funniest moments that you still think about today that still get your belly going?
I mean, I don't know how funny this is, but this is one of the more amazing stories that, you know, I enjoy telling. And it's a Todd Frazier story, and I think anybody who's ever been around Todd has probably got one Todd Frazier story or another. we were down 7-0 against UConn, or we were down 7 runs late in the game in the 7th inning, and we start chipping away, and we get up in the 9th inning with 2 outs, and we wind up loading the bases and put the tying run on first base with Todd coming up. So everybody's kind of all juiced up, and the guy who had gotten on first base was one of our slower runners, and Coach Hill is walking up and down the dugout trying to figure out who to pinch run as Todd's walking into the box.
Sure.
Well, after Coach Hill finally decided who he was going to pinch run, the pitcher is about coming set, and everybody in the dugout is screaming, timeout, timeout, timeout. And the pitcher delivered the pitch before we could actually get the pinch runner into the game, who was probably a couple steps out of the dugout. The pitcher delivers a pitch. Todd hits a ball over the fence, walk-off home run.
Yep.
When everybody in the dugout's trying to get timeout so we could get the faster runner on first base because he was going to be the tying run. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that was kind of the epitome of Todd Frazier. He could kind of put a team on his back, and you know, much as he's done in the major leagues, you know, he could kind of carry you a pretty long way.
Yep.
So that one is up there with one of the more amazing ones that I've seen over the years. well, on the minor league side, there's always some funny things that happen on the field, and they aren't necessarily funny when they happen at the time.
Sure.
So actually, a couple weeks ago, we had a kid who smoked the ball down the third base line, and he had thought that it had gotten by the third baseman. And so out of the box, he goes to make his turn all the way as if he's going to run out of double.
Sure.
And he made a turn without realizing that the guy had just made an unbelievable diving play, picked up the ball and flipped it over to first base and got him by about 15 feet. And he had the look on his face of what the hell just happened.
Sure.
But so he was feeling pretty low. And then the next day, you know, when we had the group together, I said, you know, let's talk about base running right now. And point the kid out and like, how are you feeling right now? Just kind of a little embarrassed. And I'm like, well, I got one better for you. So we had a kid 2 years ago who was a good runner and a lot faster than this kid that did this a couple weeks ago. Same exact play, you know, ball down the left, down the third base line. The kid makes a diving play, but the kid realizes that he has no plate, so doesn't even throw the ball. Our hitter winds up rounding first base, getting ready to run out of double, looking to pick up the ball when he realizes that the third baseman had it in his glove. The third baseman flips the ball over to first base, and after the kid had basically rounded the base on a single, first baseman catches the ball and tags him out.
Of course.
So I asked our guy, here in Greenville a couple weeks ago. I was like, so believe me, that's a lot worse. And he's like, that's not worse. That guy got a base hit. So there's always funny things that happen on the field, and usually they're funnier after the fact.
Yeah. A good teaching moment right there for you.
Yeah. Always got to know where the ball is.
That's it. No doubt. This is, again, as we talk through, and you've mentioned a number of them, I'm sure, but the guys that have impacted you the most. And we always go back to that sports talk radio question of the Mount Rushmore. So for you, Darren, who are the three or four guys that you just exalt, you put up on the pedestal as the three or four guys that really impact you the most? They're on your personal Mount Rushmore.
Well, number one has got to be my dad. Okay. You know, he was my first coach, and I learned how to play the game in my backyard. You know, I was in the middle of three boys, and, you know, a lot of times just, you know, going outside and grabbing our gloves and playing catch in the backyard. That was some of my best childhood memories. And some of the ones that, were not some of our best memories. We kind of put together a game where it'd be me against my two brothers and my dad would be the pitcher. And I think just about every single one of those games ended with one of us storming off in tears because of the umpire, who was also my dad at the time. And that's where the love of my game really started, was in my backyard, and the support that not only my dad, but, you know, my parents and my family and friends kind of gave me along this way. Kind of keeps me pushing even now at 38 along this journey, knowing that, you know, so many people have been a part of it, but that's really where it started. You know, he's number one. And then number two has got to be Coach Hill at Rutgers, where, you know, obviously the guy had a huge impact on me as a player. But he saw something in me that I didn't even knew existed, in an ability to, potentially be a coach. And here I am some, I guess, 11, 12 years later. And this is my profession. It's, you know, it's been a huge part of who I am, and the impact that he's had on me, without question is something that I kind of push forward every day with the idea of being able to have an impact on other guys in the same way that he's been to me as like that second father figure. So that's something that's really, really special. And if I could have an impact on, you know, 1% of the people that he's had an impact on, I think I could look back on my career, you know, some 20, 30 years down the road as being pretty successful. And my last two guys are probably guys that some aren't too familiar with. The first is a guy by the name of Jeff Garber, who was a manager of mine coming up with the Kansas City Royals before he kind of moved on to a field coordinator role with the Royals. And I was a senior sign out of Rutgers, and I signed for $5,000, and I was never considered a high-end prospect. And Jeff Garber, it didn't matter to him what my status was or what my bonus was. He gave me the best of him as a coach every single day. He gave me the same time. He gave me the same energy that he was giving the first round picks, he was giving to the future major leaguers. And it's sad to say, but I had experiences where there were guys who didn't even know my name because I wasn't a bonus baby or because I wasn't a high-end prospect. And I appreciated it then at the time because it was apparent that you wore a uniform, you got the best of him. But now being on that side of things and being as a coach, I mean, that's something that drives me, that, you know, every single guy who has a uniform deserves the best of me in the same way that I got the best of Jeff Garber. And I've been fortunate to run into him a handful of times. He now works for the Washington Nationals, and just being able to say thank you to him, because I'm sure he never got it nearly as much as he should have. And because, you know, when you're in it as a player, you kind of just, you get tunnel vision, and you think about your career, and you don't really get the chance to thank those who are really putting in their time and effort to get you better. And then the last guy would be Kelly Nicholson, who is the head coach of Orleans in the Cape Cod League. Mm-hmm. He gave me an opportunity in the summer of 2008, basically as a complete stranger. He offered me a position based on a recommendation from somebody else. He offered me a position to coach third base, to run the offense, to make out the lineup every day. And it was the first time in my, you know, at that point, my short coaching career, that I actually had to think on my own two feet. And I was able to get out of that bubble of being, you know, Coach Hill's understudy and being a Rutgers guy. And hey, you know, we knew at Rutgers, hey, if there was a man on first and nobody out, we were going to bunt. That was Coach Hill's philosophy. And being able to kind of run the show, so to speak, and have the guidance of a guy like Kelly, in a pretty high stakes summer league with some great players, you know, that really was probably the biggest break I got on the coaching side outside of, you know, Coach Hill bringing me on board, where I was able to really kind of develop my own thoughts and ideas and philosophies on some of the things that are going to put a bunch of players and a team in a position to be successful. And I've stayed in touch with Kelly over the years and still thank him every chance I get, because without that experience, I don't know where I would be today. Sure. In terms of, having an idea of my own beliefs and how to run a team and how to run an offense. So those four guys in all very different ways have definitely played a huge role in obviously my career on the field, but even more importantly as a person off of it.
That's great. And this is a tough question. I'm going to try to combine it into two parts, and I think we can get the most out of it that way. But we're talking about advice for coaches. And I think from where you sit, Fins, you've got an opportunity right now to speak to every coach. You know, through this podcast, you can speak to every coach. What advice would you offer every coach from youth all the way up through? But then I also want you to spend some time on the young coach, the guy that's in the game and he's 23, 24, 25, and he's still trying to figure it out. A lot of the lessons that you learned, what would you say to that person as well?
I mean, just the mission of, you know, the ABCA in terms of the community that you guys have kind of put forth in terms of the learning aspect of coaching. Always, always, always be learning. Because I was that young guy in his 20s who was ready to change the game. I think you need a passion for it. This is, you know, isn't necessarily a hobby by any means, for me at least. But to really make those inroads with players and people, you gotta have that passion, because they're gonna feed off that. They're gonna feed off that one way or another. You know, kids are perceptive. Sure. Players are very perceptive, and when you're faking it, they're gonna be onto you. And I think when you are open enough to show them that you're humble enough that you don't have all the answers, I think one of the most important things, three words that coaches are sometimes scared to say, but they need to be able to say them, is that I don't know. That, I think, gives them some credibility that they don't have all the answers. And I think, especially for young guys, having a sense of how to deal with players, having a sense of being open enough to try to figure out the guy, figure out the person, figure out how to get through to the kid on a personal level. That's going to enable you to make so many inroads on the baseball side. And I think it's taking the time, taking a step back to watch, because coaching evaluation is the basis of being able to coach. You know, anybody could just sit there and tell everybody, hey, do this. But if you're not actually taking the time to see what each kid needs, every kid is different. Every kid is different on the field. And as I mentioned before, every personality is different. And you're going to be able to figure out which kids need a pat on the back and which kids need to improve their footwork on defense, which kid need to figure out their timing in the box. And once you get away from that one way of, hey, this is what worked for me as a player and this is what I believe in as a coach, once you open yourself up to various ways to helping players, you're going to take off as a coach. And without question, that's been the biggest game changer for me, is understanding each individual athlete's personality, understanding each individual athlete's strengths and weaknesses from a physical standpoint.
Such a powerful message. And again, it's one that I think certainly fans, I'll back up, we all need to understand, is coach our kids, coach them individually. The blanket approach, and certainly I hope that through our podcast, through our chats, through anything that we're putting out from an ABCA perspective, that is coming out, that we've got to challenge what we're doing. We have to be better for our guys, but more importantly, we have to invest more in the individual, and that ultimately moves the team forward. Fins, I cannot thank you enough for your time, man. I know we were fighting the clock. You guys are getting ready to jump on the bus and get rolling. But, man, I cannot thank you enough. We appreciate you being an ABCA member, being part of what we do, and certainly what you're doing for the game of baseball. So we wish you luck. And, Darren, we hope to catch up with you again real soon, my man.
Cheech, you really appreciate it. You guys are having a far greater impact on the game than you even know. So keep it going, man, and always be learning, my brother.
That is certified audio gold from one of our proud ABCA members, Darren Fenster from the Boston Red Sox, on our Dugout Chatter show. Great insight from just an awesome baseball guy. It's always a treat to get to know these guys outside the white lines, talk through their personal takes on the game, their careers, their mentors. It's pretty cool. We appreciate Fins being so forthright on this show and with us. So keep tweeting, my man. Keep fighting the good fight on there. We wish you the very best to you and your guys the rest of the way. And thanks again, Darren, for your time and your energy on the show. Now, we just want to keep reminding you guys, these are for you. If you're listening to this, this podcast works to connect you with some of the very best coaches in our game. And as we move forward, we want to make sure you're up to speed on every show we put out. So here's the rundown. Number one, iTunes or Google Play. You got to go hit the subscribe button. It's going to show up on your phone every Tuesday. We put a brand new show out. Number two, stay plugged into our website, abca.org. Click on the education tab at the top. Call us in the Clubhouse podcast link. It's going to be right there waiting for you. You can scroll through all those shows. And lastly, number three, just give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. You'll always see the release of the show. We announce it. We'll pull some of the best quotes from the show throughout the week. You got to make sure you follow us right there on Twitter. And if we're talking about Twitter, let's talk about the personal growth opportunity that we have on our hashtag ABCA chat right there on Twitter. For those of you that are wondering, hashtag ABCA chats, where coaches from around the world all connect. We share coaching information, philosophies. We open ourselves up to just simply be challenged. At the same time, we're networking. We're building relationships with other coaches. We're engaging with one another. It's just a powerful hour that you'll spend on Twitter. Our next hashtag ABCA chat is going to be Monday, July the 10th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, it's a great opportunity to connect with guys from all over the world, and we hope to see you check in on our next hashtag ABCA chat. Again, make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. Also, you can find me on there as well at Coach Sheets 3. You can reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Reach out to us, guys. We love connecting with each of you. Always welcome in how these shows are hitting you on the other end of the call. Plus, we hope you've heard about our upcoming ABCA Barnstormers Clinics. We're planning on hitting 20 cities this fall on our Midwest tour as we lead towards January convention there in Indianapolis. Now, these are one-day coaching clinics. We round up the very best clinicians in each city that we're stopping in. We take the coaches that are there in attendance through live demos on the field, teaching segments, trying to cover as many fundamentals of the game as we can, all in the spirit of growing ourselves, developing ourselves, and help make each and every one of us better coaches. These are can't-miss opportunities, and if we're near your hometown, come check us out at the ballpark. For more information, go to our website, abca.org/clinics, and we hope to see you out on our Barnstormers Clinics tour this fall. And lastly, just in case you didn't know, for only $45, we can get you involved in the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity, the American Baseball Coaches Association. If you want more information, guys, go to our website, abca.org. We hope to see you jump on board and become a member with us soon. And as always, guys, every time we end a show, we just want to thank you for listening in. We appreciate you staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. But until next week, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging yourself personally and professionally. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what each of you are doing for the game of baseball. We'll be right back.